This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm thinking, why does this dude hate me?
Right.
Like
the thing is, Karl Anthony Towns is too nice. Karl Anthony Towns is too nice. He's not one of those guys that's going to be like, hey, I need the ball. Give me the ball. I'm not just the guy you pass to reverse to the next guy.
He might need to be. He might need to be.
He's not that guy, but he needs to be because Tibbs isn't doing it for him. Either they're not listening to Tibbs when he says give Karl Anthony Towns the ball or we're going to play through Karl Anthony Towns, or Tibbs is just not doing that. Tibbs has been known to be a defensive guy. And that playoff series where Karl Anthony Towns last year, he's just not being used. It's so frustrating. He's like, do these guys know what they have? And I think that's what Jimmy Butler is referring to, but Tibbs is not doing Karl Anthony Towns any favors. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's talking about, Jimmy Butler's talking about, he doesn't have any heart, he's not this, he's not that, but the way you guys are using him, man, you're not helping the guy out. Ah, that's frustrating, man.
Let's get to Loverboy in Pleasanton. Loverboy, you're up on 95.7 The Game on Warriors this week.
Hey, guys, I got to agree with you, man. I love the Warriors and everything, but as good as we've been, I just don't understand how good we are. And yet, since the Jackson era, we've just been turning the ball over with just silly passes, just rudimentary mistakes. I'm just curious why that is. Like, I know you can't be perfect. I mean, I rode the bench in Little League, and even I can notice, like, what the heck with some of these passes, you know?
Thanks, Loverboy. Honestly, I think it's a case of your greatest strength can become your greatest weakness. I mean, the Warriors are so unselfish. They want to make the home run play. They want to make the spectacular play. I mean, they probably became as close to the 80s Showtime Lakers about three, four years ago that any team ever has since the 80s Showtime Lakers.
Yeah.
In terms of just the ball humming and shots going in and the crowd going nuts. And it just felt more like they're putting on a show than even they're playing a basketball game. And I think turnovers come with that.
You're right. They're unselfish. They're super confident.
Right.
And they're bold. This team is the most audacious team.
Yes. They don't want to beat you.
They're
they want to embarrass you.
Right. And they will try any pass because they feel like they can make any pass. They'll whip it around like the Harlem Globetrotters because they feel like they're that good. And they are. The thing is, they are. But that can work against them at times. And they try to fit balls into holes that they shouldn't even try to fit them into. And they try passes that aren't even there. And they try to thread needles. And they try to put balls on a line that isn't there. And that's just what comes with the territory. When you're that confident and you feel like you can do anything, sometimes you just kind of whip the ball around and you try passes that you shouldn't try. And that's the way it goes. So the Warriors, they just kind of have to dial it back at times and try to make themselves take the easy route and make the simple pass and make the simple play and just, there's a wide open passing lane. Okay, I'll make that pass instead of trying to fit it into this little hole here and trying to thread the needle every time and going from the home run play. It's really not easy for them to do because they are that confident and they are that good.
Do you ever think when you were playing at the time that you played for the Warriors that you'd see a time where this team gets picked apart the way that it's picked apart?
Honestly,
what I mean by that is three championships, and it's like, wow, man, they turn the ball over too much, man.
Yeah.
It's like, talk about first world problems.
Yeah.
Honestly,
when they drafted Steph, I was like, okay, things could change here. Things really could change here. This team could really be scrutinized
So you saw a franchise player.
I did. When I saw the way he worked, and then I saw that first year, how he played and some of the moments where he's kind of trying things. Okay, does this work? Yep, that works in the league too. I did this in college. That works up here. Let me try this. Oh, that works. Okay. And I see his confidence building. I see his work ethic. I see the kind of guy he is, just a likable guy, a guy that kind of galvanizes the troops and guys want to play with. This guy can score and he's a great passer and his teammates love playing with him. Okay, there's something here. So you kind of see it going that way. I never thought it would get to this point. I couldn't see that. I don't think there's any way any Warrior fan or past player could have seen it ending up like this. But you could kind of see it going that way. You could kind of see something good was happening with this team, and there was a buzz whenever Steph got here and he's doing what he did in New York, getting over 50 points and dancing crazy and just kind of styling on dudes. Like this is a different type of generational talent, a player that can really bring eyes to the TV and make people love watching basketball.
Well, and that's the thing that you always keep in mind now, and this has become part of the conversation. Really, a couple of years ago it started, but now, I mean, it's obvious. You watch this Warriors team right now, and we're probably watching four Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
On a night in, night out basis. And I know some would even make the case that Iguodala should get some, at least be in the conversation, even
right.
if he comes up a little bit short.
Right.
And, you know, DeMarcus Cousins would be a guy maybe even on that track too.
Exactly.
I think if some of the other issues with coaches and teammates
yeah.
and attitude, I wouldn't put DeMarcus Cousins at a point where he's definitely a lock to not be in it.
Right.
Eventually.
Exactly.
Like, he still could be a good enough player between
exactly.
now and the end of his career
exactly.
to where he could be in it. Now, we're not watching him just yet, but the bigger point, I mean, sometimes you don't realize it until it's a couple of years in, but it's, you know, those Bulls teams had Hall of Famers. You know, you're watching the Lakers teams, the Celtics teams in the 80s. It's like, you know, walking monuments kind
right.
of thing, walking statues,
yeah.
future statues.
Yeah. And it is interesting to think about the chink in their armor, a team that's this good with this many Hall of Famers and all-stars, superstars. It's interesting to look at, okay, where can they be better? Where do they struggle? What is an issue that they deal with, and what is their Achilles heel? And turnovers is one of those things. We've been talking about the fouls, and it makes them almost human. It makes them like, okay, they're not invincible, and it makes it more interesting to watch when they give up 81 points and they turn the ball over. It's like, man, are they going to be able to overcome that this night? Is Steph going to be able to
right.
happen in the third quarter and bail them out of this one after their this 20 turnover night and everything looks sloppy and Draymond Green is blowing up? That's interesting. If they were just a great team and never turned the ball over and Draymond never blew up and got texts, it'd be a little bit more boring.
It would, if Curry got his 30 and Durant got his 30 every night, that's 60, and Klay got his 25, that's 85, and Draymond got 15.
Right.
And you're at 100 right there and, you know, close to a triple double. And then a couple of bench guys get their 10 and you get to 130. If every game was 130 to 95,
yeah.
you play great defense, you know, keep holding teams under 100. You're playing at a great pace.
And they would win 82 games.
That's like the guy's dream. We had a caller. I had a dream. But they were stressing him out, though.
Yeah,
they had a guy who said he had a dream.
I go outside, I smoke, I come back in, I watch the football, I watch the basketball.
Right, but he basically said he had to go outside and smoke a lot because of how stressful that game was last
night.
Right,
right, right.
Which is, you know, we hope he can back away from
that. That's the fun of it. The Warriors will stress you out a little bit, and then they'll make it interesting.
Exactly, and you might get a great moment at the end like you saw last night. Steven Napa is up here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I want to talk to Kalina. I'm from Kentucky. I moved to the Bay Area 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah. We bleed blue, baby.
And I'm getting old, man. My memory's going bad. So I need a reminder of who you played with at Kentucky. And I can't quite remember. Did you play with Rondo?
Yes, I did play with Rondo. I played with Chuck Hayes, Cliff Hawkins for 2 years, Keith Bogans. Was a senior when I came in. But yeah, I played with Rondo for a year and we connected a few times. He gave me some good assists and I finished him. I had some dunks here and there. But he was definitely one of those guys where he's going to question some of the things the coach says. He's just not going to take everything and be like, oh, yeah, sure, coach, whatever you say.
Right.
He's going to challenge the coach, and I think he got even a little more bold in the NBA once he got there with Doc Rivers and all the other stops he's been, the debacle in Dallas with Rick Carlisle. People forget about that, but he's a character.
Right. I moved here in 2012. And both my brother-in-laws are from Oakland, and they took me to a Warrior game, and they were playing Boston. And my whole thing was like, oh, I got to see Rondo. It turns out they pulled him out. He was injured, and he's a last-minute pull from the game. But thank you. I think you're a great asset, and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it, Steve. Steven Napa checking in. Yeah, the Celtics were doing the whole preventative care rest / injury thing. They were a little bit ahead of the curve with that. Now, they had some real injuries.
They had some old guys.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Yeah.
too. Let's call it like it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Let's call it like it is. But yeah, you look, and you know, I'll say this about the guys that are resting tonight, because Jimmy Butler's going to rest. Kawhi Leonard's going to rest. Gordon Hayward's going to rest. Maybe they're just like a parting of the clouds for LeBron to play his game.
Yeah, every team is just going, let's rest all our superstars.
Let's just shut her down today.
Let LeBron James have the night.
Because it's LeBron James night at Staples Center. I think there's going to be a parade in downtown Los Angeles.
Oh, my goodness.
Before that first game.
Yeah.
Tonight
it's going to be a tough game for him.
It'll be a good game. It'll be a fun game. The Rockets in there to take on the Lakers tonight. All right, it's JD, it's Kalena, it's Warriors this week. More of your phone calls. We got some phone calls to get to. Tim Bontemps at the bottom of the hour. And we'll kind of reset the big takeaways from the first two games for the Warriors right here, 95.7 The Game.
This is corny, but this is really strength of numbers. You don't know who's going to contribute any given night. We obviously know who we go to. You know, everybody on the bench staying ready. I think he had a little bit of juice and fire coming back here to Utah, showing up his old teammate.
It's very fitting that Jonas come back in here and get the game-winning tip and coach you up a good play. I got to my spot. I just wanted to put it up on the rim, and Jonas, man, tonight he was just everywhere where we needed him to be at the right times, and that last play showed.
Warriors This Week continues on 95.7 The Game.
Jarebko revenge game in full effect. I'll say this, when the Jazz waived him, because he actually played pretty well for them last year, when the Jazz waived him, I thought, boy, that's a guy the Warriors could probably get.
Yeah.
And he could probably help. Now, it looked like in the preseason, I wasn't going to be wrong about it.
Didn't look like he had a lot left.
But last night, and you know, Steve Kerr's on record saying he likes to play guys when they go back to places they used to play.
Yeah.
It's just kind of one of his, you know, every coach kind of has their gut instinct of when to play a guy or not.
Yeah.
And things are so analytically driven now, really in all sports, that coaches maybe don't do that as much as they used to, but Kerr's on record saying he likes playing guys when they, you know, go home or go to a spot where they used to play. And I think last night, that's why maybe Jarebko played more than, say, a guy like Jordan Bell.
Steph Curry posted on Instagram a picture of him and Jarebko, and the caption was, "They didn't want you."
Unbelievable.
I love it.
And Clay tweeted that?
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, they love it, man. And it's funny that when guys go play a team that cut them, they used to be on, left on bad terms, whatever happened, they seem to be able to raise their level. A lot of times you see that a lot. And Jarebko played extremely well, and I feel like he was obviously motivated. He knocked down a couple of threes, a mid-range jumper there, got 6 rebounds, had a really good game. So you could really tell he was motivated. And the favorite part for me was after he made the tip-in, he was right at the bench.
And
he ended up in the perfect spot.
And
he stared them down, and he made sure all his teammates came over there, and they celebrated right in front of the bench, his old bench. And that was just a beautiful thing. So for him, it was just a perfect night. Perfect night.
Yeah, that $4 million you saved, you just took an L.
Yeah, yeah.
Cost you an L.
This is a game you should have won, and I took it from you.
What if I had hit 3 threes and got a tip going the other way? This would have been a 20-point win.
This could have been you. I could have been doing this for you, but you didn't want me.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. The text line at 957-95, stealing my thunder a little bit here. We'll get to Rich on the phone lines, too. Warriors are going to have an all-around better year because they didn't go to China, and it just looks like they're having a little bit more fun. The teamwork, the happiness, the unity, it looks like it's back. It's two games. I thought the opener against the Thunder, you throw that game out regardless. That game looked a lot like last year, but I thought last night they brought a different level toward trying to get back in the game and win it that I didn't think they did. They had in the bag the last 2 years.
Yeah, I feel like it's a combination of all that. They didn't go to China. They're probably a little fresher. I think they learned from last year. Because how many times last year were we talking about, oh, they're lacking focus. The defensive intensity is there. Where is their motivation? They're losing games they shouldn't lose. This isn't the Warriors. That was what was happening a lot of last year, and I think the Warriors really learned from that, and they're going, man, we made this way harder than it needed to be. We didn't need to finish at the two spot. Our priority is get to that number one seed. Let's play this regular season like we're supposed to. Let's be as good as we can be. Let's be motivated. Let's get off to a good start, and I think that's what Steve Kerr's mentality is, too. He's playing guys' minutes. He's like, hey, we're going for wins here. Let's send a message. Let's get off to a good start here. And let's get this season started off the way it should. Let's play Warrior basketball. If we're struggling in some areas, we're going to compete till the last buzzer, see if we can get wins, see if we can finally start getting some stops. Let's let Draymond Green be Draymond Green in the fourth quarter and make winning defensive plays and winning offensive plays all over the court. Let's do our thing. Let's get off to a good start. And that's really what the Warriors have done these first two games here.
When you look at it, you can always dial it back at any point, right? Like right now you're seeing
as far as the playing time.
The guys are playing more minutes, the starters. Kerr's trying to get them into shape. You know, he's mentioned a couple of times how you almost have to push to get over. There's a physical hump you have to get over to where you just feel normal when you're getting up and down in game action. So I think he's trying to push them maybe over that hump this weekend a little bit when they're playing at altitude in Salt Lake, and also Denver is, you know, that's the altitude capital of the world, right?
Yeah.
At least in NBA circles. So trying to get over that hump, trying to get the minutes. Plus, the Warriors just aren't that deep right now.
Right.
So it's a good opportunity to get in and let those guys get their run, but then also know that, hey, if you're 20-3, then you can dial it back a little bit, and there isn't going to be so much angst with people saying, oh, you're struggling and you look like you're not having fun and everything's a chore and this and that. And you know what? You also might have injuries too.
Right.
Like knowing that injuries are going to pop up, you better win every game you can while you're whole.
Yeah. And I think what Saint said when we talked to him is so true and really interesting, that if the Warriors stuck to the plan they had as far as minutes for all these guys, these first two games, they may be 0-2.
I think 1-1, but
maybe 1-1.
I don't know about that Oklahoma City game. That's the old, you know what that is? That's the old coach.
Yeah. But his overall point I like. And it's that, well, sometimes you got to coach by the seat of your pants, and they're trying to get the win here, and that's what it took. And I agree with you saying that these two games at altitude, playing guys' minutes here, may help them get in shape more, because I live in Denver. And when I played in the league, I used to actually go back to Denver sometimes during the summers and work out there for most of the summer. And
like for an added benefit?
For an added benefit. So when I came back to training camp, I could run for days.
Right.
And during the season, I could run for days.
You're
and
like,
I was
oh, this
good.
Is nothing.
Yeah, I'm more in shape than everybody else. Like everybody else has been running sprints and doing things and they're in shape, but I'm in a different kind of shape because I've been at high altitude doing it. And it's the same reason the Olympic people train in Colorado Springs and do that thing, because that high altitude, it helps. So two games at high altitude here and big minutes, the guys may feel a little better, and you may not see as much fatigue after these games as maybe we've seen these first two games.
Let's get to Rich in Fremont. Rich is up next here on 95.7 The Game. You're on Warriors This Week. Hey, Rich.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Kalina, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. What's going on, brother?
Nothing much. You know, I think when I watched last night's game, one of the things I took away from it was the fact that You know, and I'm listening to people, you know, this morning talk about, well, man, you know, that was a game where they didn't play very well. They made all these different mistakes. You know, Utah Jazz probably should have won, and they probably should have. They actually played very well. But I think one of the things I took away from that game was the fact that, you know, we as Warrior fans, we set the bar very high for the Golden State Warriors, because when you win a title and you won as many times as they have, yes, the bar is set very high. But the one thing we don't remember is that the Golden State Warriors are human, okay? They're not gods, okay? So what does that mean? It means that there's going to be times when they're not going to be as sharp as they need to be. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to have turnovers. That's going to happen, okay? Now, as a spectator, it's easy for us to point that out. But I think Michael Jordan said it best. He said, when you were at the top, he said that you're playing King of the Hill. And everybody's battling for you. And everybody's after you. That's the reason why whenever teams like Utah or another team come in and they either win the game or they make it close, everybody wants to point out what's wrong. But what everybody doesn't realize is that they need a game like that. They need a game like that to let them know that, hey, guess what? You are a target. You are a bullseye. And we're coming after you. So I'm glad the Warriors won. But I think as spectators, we've got to remember, they're human beings. That's all I got.
No, that's a great point,
so
Rich.
So true, man.
That's a great point. Let's keep it quickly moving because we're going to get to Tim Bontemps. M-Squared in Dublin. M-Squared in Dublin, a question for Kalena. We love those here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, M-Squared.
What's up, fellas? First off, good show this morning. I like hearing the analysis regarding, you know, the Warriors' greatest strength as being their greatest weakness. And I think, you know, in efforts for them to play as dynamic as they do, they are going to take a lot of chances and they're going to give it up some. So my question for Kalena, and Kalena, first off, I got to say, I saw you early on in your broadcasting career and the growth, tremendous. If I may compliment you and just say fantastic growth. Awesome to hear you on the radio, see you on TV. You've done a really good job.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Your basketball life. What I'm curious about, though, I got a Nelly question for you.
Ooh.
I always remember when you came up. I remember specifically the day that a reporter asked.
I think I know where this is going.
Nelly. They asked Nelly about Azubuki, and he said, "Yeah, I like to drink that after the game or something," something to those lines. And I'm just curious because I know what a hard son of a gun he was with his star players, with the Mullies and the Hardaways. What was it like coming up from, you know, undrafted, coming up from the D League? And having to earn your way and earn the respect of him. I mean, I was amazed when you came on the scene. I think he had to play you because initially they were short of bodies, but you really made his rotation. I'm just curious, do you have any stories or any thoughts about how'd you bust his, you know, his circle and get in the game?
Yeah, that was one of the things that was kind of my motivation. I wanted him to know me not as a drink, but as a player. So I worked towards that. He thought I was Zambuka at first. But, yeah, it was interesting getting called up because you're right. That's what I was about to say. I had to play right away because there was that many injuries. So they told me, hey, just come in and do what you were doing in the D League. It was a D League at the time. Now it's a G League. And obviously I was a scorer. I was a guy that had the highest average points-wise in the D League. And I was an aggressive player. And coming up to the league, you kind of have questions about, okay, I'm playing with Baron Davis. I'm playing with these established NBA players. How do I pick my spots? I need to defer to them, but I need to be assertive at the same time. I need to get mine, but also be unselfish. So you kind of got to walk that line of trying to fit in, but also make sure Don Nelson looks at you and goes, okay, I need this guy in the game. I need this guy to play what he brings to us. We can't do without for too long. So that was my mentality. I just wanted to come in and make my mark. Honestly, it's basketball. So at times you just kind of let the game come to you and you take what the defense gives you. You know what your game is. And that's one of the things for me. I felt like going to the D League for me was something that I actually needed because it kind of pointed out my weaknesses and it made me look at those, it highlighted those, and I was forced to work on those to become a better player and really look at myself in the mirror and go, okay, why am I here? How come I'm not in the NBA? What is it that I need to work on to get to the NBA? And I was able to work on those things. So by the time I got to the NBA, I was like, okay, I know I can do these things and be effective. So I tried to do those right away, and I kind of got off to a hot start. I think I had 30, over 30 in LA against the Clippers. I had some pretty good games to start with there, and it was really a great experience for me because Baron Davis was there playing with me. He was one of the guys that was not injured, and he kind of took me under his wing and helped me out that way. So it was a pretty cool experience playing for Don Nelson. He's definitely a unique guy. He was the first guy, the first coach I ever had that called a timeout and didn't say a word. just sat there and looked at us. And I was looking around going, is something wrong? Why is no one saying anything? Why is Don Nelson just kind of looking at us? And that's just the way he was. At times, we would lose games, and he wouldn't come in for a while, and then he would walk in the locker room, and he would go, well, we tried. Bring it in. That's all he would say.
Oh, my God.
Dude, he's a character, man. He loved to drink his beers, and I think early on in his coaching career, he's a little harder, and he'd get into guys and yell a little more. And by the time I got there, he's a little more laid back, and he would bring his dog in there. And one time his dog pooped on the practice court, and we all had laughs there. He was a great dude, man. I loved playing for him. But if you got into his doghouse,
that was it.
That was it. And there were guys that couldn't
get
out.
You couldn't get out of it.
It was tough to get out of there. Matt Barnes will tell you. Just ask Matt Barnes. But he was
because Matt Barnes played a lot for him.
Yeah, he was initially. He was a huge part of the We Believe, and a huge reason the Warriors were successful that year. And then the next year
like
after
Nelly,
that,
Nelly liked playing guys that like the guys like Matt Barnes,
exactly,
guys like yourself.
Positionless guys that can guard bigs, guard smalls. Yeah, that's kind of where it started. Nelly ball, small ball, and all those things. So he was fun to play for. He had me guarding Amari Stoudemire and point guards. Like, you never knew what you were going to get with him. He just felt like, okay, I'm just going to play and make sure I get my mismatches, and we're going to try things, and we're going to put guys where we feel like we have an advantage, and we're going to play that way. And he did his thing unabashedly. It was fun to play for the guy.
It's John Dickinson. It's Kalen Azubuike here on 95.7 The Game. As we are with you until 1 o'clock, the Warriors and the Denver Nuggets set to go from Denver tomorrow right here on 95.7 The Game. We'll have Warriors live for you at 3:30, as that'll be with Matt Steinmetz and Daryl the Guru Johnson. And also they'll have the post game for you, Warriors wrap-up, coming up after the ball game as well. Let's get to our next guest, final guest of the program today. It's an absolute pleasure, as always, to be joined by Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post. Tim, thanks a lot for coming on the program as well. And catch everybody up. Where are you today? Did you go? Were you in Salt Lake City last night? You're headed to L.A. today, or were you already in L.A.?
I'm still in Salt Lake. I was at the game last night, and I'm still out here. So trying to recover from what was a pretty exciting night of basketball.
Yeah, incredible. And just give us a couple of your takeaways from that ball game, because it felt a little bit to us like a game from a couple of years ago where maybe the Warriors weren't fully engaged, but they got fully engaged, and they went and they stole it. Whereas maybe the last couple of years, that's a game that either completely gets away from them, or they don't win it. And I think that could maybe be a little bit of a fuel, you know, for this team as they kind of slog through the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was another reminder, JD, that the Warriors are the rare team that even on the road against a really good team, they can, you know, they can go up against a really good team in a tough place to play, try for about 18 minutes, and win the game, right? I mean, that's really what happened. I mean, you look at how that game played out, and, you know, the Warriors, you know, didn't really put in much effort in the first half. They give up 81 points to the Jazz. They don't really cover Joe Ingles on several possessions, which is not wise from three. But they lock in the second half. They hold Utah to 42 points in the second half. And, you know, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry are great, and they get the job done. And, you know, there's not many teams that could go into a place like Utah against a team like that that's really revved up and, you know, try for less than a half and win. So I think to your point, that's a real credit to the Warriors. I think the Jazz are going to be really good. I think they're going to finish with the second best record in the West, maybe even the best record. Golden State really takes its foot off the gas. But I do think Donovan Mitchell is going to have a bit of an adjustment this year. I think you saw he missed his final 8 shots last night.
Yeah.
He might take some hero ball shots, including that one with about 8 seconds left after. I thought it was kind of odd. Utah, I thought, had a better matchup for Mitchell, and then got him switched on to Kevin Durant. And then he pulled up from 25 feet, which, you know, really wasn't the wise move there. And I think, you know, that's a guy who you know, obviously burst on the scene in a big way last year and is going to be a hell of a player. But, you know, I think he's got to, you know, get readjusted and get back to what he was doing last year that made it so successful, as opposed to trying to become, you know, Dwayne Wade 2.0 today.
This is obviously an interesting year for the Warriors. Kevin Durant can opt out after this season. Klay Thompson has a decision to make this coming off season. Do you feel like KD cares if he's looked at as the MVP of the Warriors, like the most important player for the Warriors, the best player, or if Steph is looked at as the MVP for the Warriors? Because they're both having a great start to the season. I've heard people say Steph should get MVP discussion nods and all these things. Do you think that's something he cares about? Because KD will tell you he does not care. But deep down, what do you think?
I mean, I think all these guys are, I mean, you know, you played in the league, Glenn. I mean, for guys to get to that level, they got to always think they're the best, right? I mean, you're all hyper-competitive people. So, I mean, I'm sure on some level that matters to them, even if you wouldn't say it publicly. But I don't really think at the end of the day that Steph and KD are going to be, like, fighting over who gets to be called MVP of the Warriors or MVP of the league, you know? I mean, I think when those guys had the conversation back in 2016, you know, when Steph called him, it was like, hey, let's do this. I think they both kind of understood that it was going to take a unique set of circumstances for either one of them to potentially be MVP of the league anymore, right? Because you kind of see that ground when you decide to team up, you know, in kind of a way that, you know, I know LeBron won a couple MVPs in Miami, but, you know, when he and Wade kind of did the same thing, it was like they're, you know, at least that first year, they both kind of knew that no matter what they did, they probably weren't going to win the MVP anymore. You know, and I don't think that is really something that's going to play into it. I mean, there is a potential that this team splits up after this season, but if it does, I don't think that's the reason why.
Tim, when you look at the first couple of days of the season, what stands out to you? Obviously, the Rockets were bad, and the Pelicans have been great on offense, and the Lakers were maybe about what we thought they would be in their first game. What stands out among the first couple of games, among things that may be an overreaction through a couple of games, or are things that actually could ring true?
All right, so a couple things. I think the Pelicans are going to be damn good. You know, you saw anybody who watched that game against the Rockets on Wednesday. I mean, if AD is healthy, they are going to fly up and down the court. He really, you know, Brian Windhorst wrote a big piece about him this week about how locked in he is now and how he's kind of grown into his place in the league. I think Kalenic could probably speak to that as a guy who's been through it. Like, you know, AD, I think this is year 7 for him in the league. He's 25, 26 years old. It's like really seems like he's hitting his prime. And I think the combination of him, Julius Randle, and Nikola Mirotic is, you know, probably the best trio of bigs in the league, just in terms of how they fit together. You can play any two of those guys together at the same time. They're going to be really good fits. So I think they're going to be really good. I was in Portland for Lakers Blazers on Thursday, and I think the Lakers are kind of exactly what I thought they were going to be, which is a team that is going to have to really push the pace with a guy in LeBron who has never liked to push the pace. That's going to struggle on the boards and, you know, has inconsistent three-point shooting, and when they hit threes, they're going to be awfully tough, and when they don't, like the other night, they're going to struggle. You know, I think we're going to see that the Bucks are going to be pretty good. They had a big win at home last night, blew out the Pacers, you know, in their home debut in their new arena, and I think, you know, with Mike Budenholzer there, I think they're going to move the ball a lot more. Giannis is going to be, I think, a potential MVP candidate in that system this year, and you know, I thought the biggest takeaway so far for me is that Kawhi Leonard looks healthy. I know he's resting tonight, but he was great last night against the Celtics. And, you know, I think Toronto, you know, Toronto and Boston to me are the two teams that in a 7-game series this year could beat Golden State. And I personally hope that we get that series in the Eastern Conference Finals, because it just, it has the feel to me of something that could be a lot like Warriors Thunder a couple of years ago, and just a knockdown, drag out war for 7 games with two really long athletic teams. With a bunch of guys who can create shots and really good defensive players all over the place. It's just, I think it has the potential to be an incredible series. I think anybody who, you know, sat at home and watched, you know, Raptors, Celtics, and then Warriors, Jazz very well might have saw the Eastern and Western Conference Finals previews last night.
And just two terrific games. It was tremendous.
Awesome. I was going to ask
you. So much fun to watch.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because the Jazz to me looked like a team that could be in the Western Conference Finals, but I feel like maybe we're sleeping on the Spurs just a little bit because they still have Greg Popovich in that system, and they have a motivated DeMar DeRozan. Do you feel like the battle for the to get to the two seed is between the Spurs and the Jazz, or do you feel like the Houston Rockets still have a shot to be that? What do you think about that?
The Rockets are still going to be really good. I mean, I don't know if I would quite put the Jazz in two seed conversation, but I do think that the people who have declared that that the Spurs are going to miss the playoffs and are not going to be good, I think are missing the boat in terms of the fact that, like you said, I mean, they have DeMar DeRozan. They have LaMarcus Aldridge. You would argue that those are probably two of the 20 best players in the league, maybe 25, on a nightly basis. And if you have two guys that are that good, I understand they don't, they traded Kawhi Leonard and they lost Leonard Ginobili and they're going to have some holes. But remember, this is a team that won 47 games last year with Kawhi Leonard playing 9 games. And they added Jakob Poeltl, who I think is a solid, dependable defensive starting center in the league. And they added DeMar DeRozan, who's a 25-point-a-game scorer who can handle the ball. And, yeah, I know they don't have point guards, but DeMar can essentially run their offense for them and kind of be James Harden without the three-point shooting. So, I think they're going to be a lot better than a lot of people have predicted. I've seen them, they're going to be under their win total, which is like 44 wins in Vegas and going to miss the playoffs. And I just don't see that. I think they're going to be really good. I mean, I'll happily bet with Greg Popovich and with that Spurs culture until they prove that, they're past the point of no return with this run they've been on.
Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post joining us here on 95.7 The Game. A quick thought just on the Nuggets this year, the Warriors' next opponent. Yep. They're a team that they got to make the playoffs this year after coming up short the last couple of years. Do you think they're a lock to get in with another year in the system and Millsap back in the fold and all of that?
They should be, JD. I mean, they're an interesting team. They had a big win the other night. They were down.
Yeah,
they were down 8 in the fourth quarter in L.A. against the Clippers, who beat the Thunder last night. Looked like they're going to be pretty good. And, the Nuggets made a big rally. I think they ended the game on like a 20-5 run. They win the game. Nikola Jokic is terrific. I thought it was interesting. Mike Malone, former Warriors assistant, former Kings coach, got a contract extension this week. That came kind of out of left field. There was a lot of talk around the league that entire organization could be in jeopardy if they missed the playoffs again. To your point, they've been close the last couple of years and struck out. And, I thought it was interesting timing that he got a 2-year extension when he did. Thought it was a big sign of a big vote of confidence to him of where the Nuggets are going and what they're doing. I think as long as they're healthy, I think have a chance to be really good. I'm a big Jamal Murray fan. Jokic is going to be a terrific center. They're going to have defensive issues, and I think they're always going to have defensive issues. But, if you told me that at the end of the season they were, the NBA's number one offense or number two or number three offense right up there with teams like Houston and Golden State, I wouldn't be surprised in the least.
Tim, great stuff as always, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, sounds good, fellas. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, one of the best. Here on 95.7 The Game. Love just kind of bouncing around, very opinionated, very piped into what's going on. And I think my biggest takeaway, just looking at the Spurs, Kalena, DeMar DeRozan looks like a Spur.
He does.
Like some guys just look like somebody texted me last night, Joe Ingles looks like a Spur. Ingles looks like the Jazz look like the Spurs. They just keep kind of plugging guys in. They're deep. They run their stuff, different things like that. I think the Spurs are definitely a playoff team if they're healthy. And maybe better than they were last year because Kawhi didn't even play for them last year. They still were a playoff team.
Right. I think they'll be definitely better than last year. DeMar DeRozan looks comfortable. And I think one of the big things that is helping him be comfortable is his friendship with Rudy Gay. He's really close with Rudy Gay. And you come to a new team and you're trying to fit in and you're trying to figure things out. Having a guy there that you're close with, that you talk to on the phone, that really helps. It really helps, and it makes a big difference, especially for a guy like DeMar DeRozan who looks like he's one of those guys that likes to have his friends around and likes to play with his friends and maybe looks like he's kind of a sensitive guy, kind of a quiet guy. He's not a monster personality. So I think that really helps him out. But he's a dynamic player. And people say he's kind of one of those lower echelon stars in the league, superstars in the league that really can't shoot threes and may be a little unreliable when it comes to playoff time. But he's a monster regular season player. And he was last year with the Toronto Raptors. And he had a tough, really bad series against the Cleveland Cavaliers, but before that he was pretty good. So he's got a chip on his shoulder, obviously. And the true test for him will be, okay, what happens come playoff time? And can Popovich put him in situations for him to thrive and really be successful in the playoffs?
We got Jim Cosimore and Michael Urban coming up at the top of the hour. They've got you from 1 until 5 today here on 95.7 The Game as we wrap up Warriors this week. About 10 minutes to go on the program. Our thanks to Tim Bontemps. It's JD and Kalena here with you. Been a great show. One of the things I like to do in this last segment, though, Kalena, is just empty the notebook. I got a bunch of stuff typed up, and you know, I'm writing, writing things down. You know, throughout the course of the show, the one thing we haven't really gotten to yet.
Let's wrap.
Jordan Bell. What's going on with Jordan Bell? Fan favorite, a guy that it always feels like maybe he should be playing more on the surface, at least to the common fan, but. I said this to you, I think, during one of the breaks or maybe before the show. My take on Jordan Bell and his lack of playing time, by the way, he did not play last night. He did not play coach's decision. I'm looking at his line from the game on Tuesday, 6 minutes and 39 seconds. So he's played 7 minutes.
Yes.
In two games with a DNP last night. My general take with Jordan Bell last year and this year, it seems to me that Steve Kerr feels like he needs to keep him humbled throughout the course of a season by maybe tweaking that playing time a little bit. Is that a crazy thing to say?
Stay humble. Sit down. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Keep him humble.
I agree with you there. It looks that way. It also feels to me like this is what happens when a player is in the doghouse. Now, I'm not saying Jordan Bell is in the doghouse. I have no idea.
But it looks like he might be.
Feels like he could be.
If Nelly was coaching the team,
right,
he'd be in the
doghouse.
This
is what Nelly would do with players. Like, Matt Barnes, you sit over here. We have no use for you. You're in my doghouse. And it's really tough to get out of that. Now, I don't know. I have no idea if Jordan Bell did something. But I agree with you. That's an interesting point because Jordan Bell does have a tendency to get to a point where he's maybe feeling himself a little too much. And guys like Kevin Durant have to come over there and tell him, hey, keep working, young fella. You're still young.
Right.
You haven't done much in this league. Keep working.
We love that enthusiasm, but
don't lose that hunger. Yeah, don't start feeling yourself too much. Don't get too prideful. Pride comes before a fall. Keep working hard. You haven't done anything yet. And Jordan Bell looks like he's one of those guys that may need that. And Steve Kerr may be thinking that. Or he may just be thinking, I like Kevon Looney. I really like Kevon Looney. You don't expect much from the guy when you look at him. Doesn't look like he can move fast. Doesn't look like a great athlete. But he's just so solid. I know what I'm going to get from him. In these particular games, I liked him just because he brought some stability off the bench. He's able to switch out on the guard. He's not going to make mistakes. He's going to be a solid finisher. Yeah, he may not jump as high as Jordan Bell or run as fast, but he's going to be solid. He's going to be at the right place at the right time. Damian Jones is your starter right now. He's played really well, and he's made Steve Kerr look really smart playing him as a starter right now, and he's made plays on both ends of the court. So right now your bigs are playing really well. It's not like you're going, man, the bigs are not doing the job. Where's Jordan Bell? What is the deal? It's like the bigs are kind of doing their job. Well, Jarepko came in and had a huge impact. Like,
he really did.
Maybe Jordan Bell plays in the next game against Denver. We thought he would play in Utah, the high altitude, the fatigue. We thought that Steve Kerr may have to lengthen his rotation a little bit. Maybe that happens here in Denver.
Well, and you've got a back-to-back, too. So the Warriors have the game last kind of a quirky little schedule early.
Right.
They had the game last night. They're off today. Then they go from Utah to Denver today. They stayed over in Salt Lake City, but they play the game in Denver, and then they're back home Monday night.
Yeah.
You'd think with the way the schedule's been, I'm not used to seeing those as much anymore. It's like, whoa, they're like Sunday, Monday.
Yeah. Well, two games at high altitude this early in the season is tough. That's not easy.
That's
guys
tough
are still
on its own.
To get in shape.
And now you're throwing a third and four into that,
that's
and
tough.
You're going every other, and you're going back east the next week.
Like, if we don't see him, if we don't see Jordan Bell after this stretch of games that we're talking about,
and I think we will.
Yeah. then we'll start talking. Okay. What is he? What's really happening? What's really going on?
Because with Steve Kerr, even if you are in the doghouse, he gives you opportunities to get out.
Right. It's not as hard to get out of Steve Kerr's doghouse as it was with Don Nelson.
Right. So I think we will see him, but he is out of the rotation right now, and it happened a little bit last year where you thought, boy, he's going to play a lot, and then he just didn't. And you think, well, why is that? And just the only thought that I could come up with is he's trying to keep the young fella humble.
Stay humble.
Stay humble. Keep working. Yes. And I think your point about Kevon Looney is right on the money. I mean, sometimes Steve Kerr will telegraph it. If you're really listening to the things he says in the press conferences and the media availabilities and interviews and stuff, he can be a little bit coy, and there's certain things he doesn't want to say, but he actually tells you a lot if you know what you're listening to. And when he says Kevon Looney's been the best big in training camp, and then he says Kevon Looney's offseason was outstanding, getting his body ready to play, that tells you Kevon Looney's in the rotation.
He's like a coach's darling.
He really is.
It's like he's just one of those guys that makes you feel good. You don't expect him to be able to do much, but he produces.
And he doesn't make mistakes.
He doesn't make mistakes. Coaches love that. Turnovers get on Steve Kerr's last nerve. And mistakes, defensive mistakes, Ron Adams, if you watch him over there during games, he's just rolling his eyes and... But you don't really see that when Kevon Looney's playing.
And I think you touched on something that's key when you look at the difference between Looney and Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell, to me, is the guy that makes more mistakes than people think in terms of assignments. Mistakes that show up on film. Mistakes that might not be mistakes to the untrained eye. Mm-hmm. Mistakes that might not be mistakes to the regular basketball viewer, because you don't know what an assignment is unless you're in that locker room.
Exactly. Or on offense. You hesitate a little bit on the offensive side. The Warriors' offense
it's got to move.
Moving. It's fluid. Right. You got to keep moving. With Looney in there, there's no indecision. It's catch, swing, put it on the floor, shot fake, go to the basket.
He does a lot of the simple things well.
Yeah, handoff. He knows exactly what to do. There's no indecision there. Jordan Bell can catch the ball. He may take a quick dribble and now it throws everything off, or you hesitate a little bit, or there's a moment of indecision. Oh, I don't know where to go. Oh, should I shoot it? They're leaving me wide open. Wait, no, Steph is coming off. So there's that little indecision that can kind of throw all the timing off. And with the Warriors offense, that stuff shows up and it's pretty evident. So the Warriors coaches are looking at that and going, man, Kevon Looney, he's just solid. He understands what he's doing out there, and you tend to go with him more times than not.
One of the things we like to do at the end of the show here is we look at the week ahead. And there's quite a few games. Warriors are at Denver tomorrow. Suns Monday night at Oracle. Wizards are in at Oracle on Wednesday night. And then the team flies back east. They'll play the Knicks and they'll play Brooklyn. But before this show is back on, there'll be four games. So Denver, Phoenix, Memphis, at New York. Are the Warriors going to be undefeated a week from today?
They could be. They could be. I think this next game is probably the one I'm looking at going, okay, this could be the most dangerous game. Because, again, we've seen some crazy things happen in Denver. Now, I love Phoenix. I do.
They need a point guard. They have a lot of talent. And
Devin,
I think they're going to be better coached.
Devin Booker, they're saying he's basically their point guard.
Right.
This guy,
yeah,
he's a playmaker.
It's interesting because I've actually always kind of wondered if he could be a point guard.
He has point guard skills. It's crazy. At Kentucky, you didn't see any of that.
No.
And that's how good that team was. Yeah. He was coming off the bench. And now his game has just blossomed. He's got a wetter. And he's got the mentality to be a superstar. He's cool with taking shots in the fourth quarter and taking clutch big-time shots. But they got T.J. Warren. They got Josh Jackson. They got DeAndre Ayton, who is solid and who's got good post game. He's got a soft touch inside. They're an exciting team to watch.
No, they definitely are, and I'm excited to get a look at them. I think we're going to be talking about a Warriors team that's 6-0 a week from today. I think they're going to play better than they did in Denver, and then they're going to win, or than they did in Utah at Denver, and then they're going to win the other games. And we're going to be looking at 6-0. Colette, it's been, man, 4 hours just flew by,
man.
Great stuff. We got Coz and Herbs. They're coming up next. Want to thank everybody. James and Nash and all of our great guests on the program today. Coz and Urban are coming up next right here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.